Hey, this is Jim, and this episode was recorded a while back, and it was supposed to run a couple of weeks ago, but then it got bumped by some untimely musician deaths. So if you hear any weird time references, that's why.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we're living on the air in Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia, WRTS. Okay, Patrick, so I thought since Rob's been hanging around this week,
yeah,
you know, we'd have him on for another episode today.
Totally.
And so great to see Rob Gates. Hi, Rob.
Hello.
And
yeah, it's true. I haven't been in the basement since 2019.
Time. Yeah.
It's been crazy. Yeah, you were, I think we mentioned this before, but
Kevin Goff and I were the last,
you were the last one here.
That's right.
Last
one. I remember that.
Before it closed down for 15
in.
Months or
yep,
whatever.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anyway, this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Rob Gates. Yep.
And we're in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. And what we want to talk about today, Rob had this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this played nicely off of a recent episode we just did where we had on Mike Marrone from SiriusXM's
yes.
The Loft. And we talked a bit about his radio background and so on. And, you know, he kind of got away from the world of terrestrial radio, went into satellite and everything,
yep.
Right? But Rob wanted to go back in time a little bit and talk about the radio stations that we listened to when we were younger
mm-hmm.
before you had all these different options,
right?
And Rob's lived in a couple of big East Coast cities, so I find this really interesting. And we can just talk about that for a little bit, okay?
Sounds great.
All right, so what was the idea, Rob?
So the idea is that way back in the day, the only way to really get exposed to new music was through the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because chances are you weren't going down to the record store and buying music from an artist that you've never heard. That would probably be a colossal waste of money. And we can see from Patrick's basement that that's exactly, exactly what happens.
Right. I was about to say.
For the rest of us, it's nice to hear something first and then realize, okay, well, I like this band. But I've always been fascinated by radio. Way back when I always wanted to be a DJ when I was growing up and that sort of thing. I had one of those old Radio Shack kits, you know, where you could broadcast
yes.
like 20 feet.
I love
oh,
that.
Really?
Right?
Yeah.
Into, yeah. AM radio, you know, in your house.
Yeah.
Me and my friends, you know, we used to have a lot of fun with that. As mentioned, I grew up in two places, Boston and Philadelphia, and then went back to college in Boston. But this is pre-college stuff. AOR radio was just starting to come in on FM. Up until that point,
album-oriented rock.
Album-oriented yes. rock. Before then, everything was on AM.
Right.
Amplitude modulation. Which sounds like crap.
Right.
But those of us who are old enough remember listening to Top 40 on, you know, whatever the AM Top 40 station was
yep.
in your market in Boston. It was WRKO or 68 WRKO.
WRKO, Boston.
You know, with all those jingles. And then in Boston, you know, that matured to FM, where we had 94.5 WCOZ, of course, WBCN, which I think is probably known nationally.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Although I was not a big fan of WBCN for whatever reason. I was in the WCOZ camp.
Oh, okay.
And then we also had WAAF, which was out in Worcester, Mass., which I'm sure Bud Verge is well-versed in his part of the world. But in addition to the radio stations, you also had the DJs who became icons
right.
at the time. You know, that there's Charles Laquadera on WBCN, who, you know, everybody knew, and, you know, his big mattress show. And then out in WAAF, you had Harvey Warfield and the Rock and Roll Air Force and all this sort of cool stuff, which when you're a kid, right, you know, you're like in elementary school and middle school, like these are sort of like heroes.
That's
and
right.
In the meantime,
yeah.
they're exposing you to all of this music, both the stuff that you know and then the stuff you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a kid, this is before I had transport or money to get to the mall, to the record store, I had one of those sort of combination radio cassette players that could record directly off the radio. So when, you know, song that I wanted to hear would come on and hopefully they would announce the song, you know, you'd be ready to hit record. And that's how you would make your first.
Totally right.
Right. You make your first mixtape. So I had a mixtape full of songs that were cut off, full of station IDs,
right.
full of, you know, DJ talk over them.
No intro until the words came in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Later on, I moved to Philadelphia, you know, where we had the rock and roll powerhouse 93.3 WMMR
yep.
Metro Media Station. And I know they used to always compete with WMMS. in Cleveland to say who was the biggest rock and roll radio station. And WMMR, I think for the 4 years in which I lived in the Philadelphia area, had the same DJ lineup, which was pretty remarkable.
Wow, that's incredible.
If I was not in school, the radio was on. In the meantime, during this both happened in Boston and in Philadelphia, alternative commercial stations started to come in. So previously, all alternative, you know, rock was on college radio. And, you know, you had your AOR, which was, you know, your Led Zeppelin, The Who, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
And then both in Boston and Philly, probably because they both had vibrant music scenes as well as this growing audience of alternative people. And then you had all the 80s influx music that started coming in that wasn't quite making it to AOR, but still needed to get played, you know, the beginning of the second British invasion, all that stuff. So in Philadelphia, we had I-92, Rock of the 80s, with my favorite DJ name of all time, Mel Toxic. Actually, funny story about Mel. What they would do is they would occasionally play albums back to back.
Yes.
Which, like full albums?
Yep. Full albums, which was great for those of us who had cassette players built into our... So when Let's Dance came out, I called him up. I'll never forget this. I called up. I said, hey, when are you going to play that new Bowie album? You know, the whole Bowie album back to back. He goes, well, we're not. I'm like, well, why not? He goes, because punks like you record it and then they don't listen to us anymore.
That's funny.
Great. And you don't go to the record store and buy it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I always look back, you know, with nostalgia. And we also had a WYSP in Philadelphia, which was the first station to syndicate Howard Stern.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they couldn't touch the Morning Zoo on WMMR. I mean, that was like everybody listened to the Morning Zoo. And of course, and that again was a concept that was copied all over America. But I think MMR was the first or the second to do that. It was extremely entertaining, and they had their own parody musicians, and they did all sorts of creative stuff. And then also on WMMR, one of the DJs back then was a guy named Pierre Robert, who had the lunchtime slot 10 to 2. And by golly, he is still on the air.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So he's still on the air, same time slot from when I was in high school, and still spinning the tunes, and he still takes live requests at lunch like back in the day. And his big claim to fame was on Thanksgiving Day. He's the guy who anchors the whole Alice's Restaurant.
Oh, okay, cool.
And
that's a tradition that goes way back.
It is. Yeah. And we, because of streaming, this Thanksgiving, because we were home because of the COVID, I turned it on.
Oh, nice.
And we were listening to it in the house. And what was amazing was all the people that were writing in, calling in, you know, hitting on the social media like, hey, you know, I've been listening to this for 20 years,
or I haven't
heard this in 30 years, but now I can stream it, and this is great, and you're still doing it, and I can't believe it, and this is such a treat. And it was really a treat, you know, and brought back memories of, you know, being in my house while in high school, and my mom fixing Thanksgiving dinner, and, you know, I'd sort of be away from that, but up in, you know, my room listening to Alice's Restaurant and four-part harmony.
Yeah, there you go.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
I look back on it, and today, you know, radio is just not what it used to be. And here in D.C., it just seems to be a desert.
Well,
D.C.'s never been a very good radio town.
So you can speak to that. So you grew up in the D.C. area. I did. So what are your memories of listening to radio when you were a kid?
You know, in some ways similar to Rob. I mean, there were top 40 stations that you listened to. And I think, you know, as Rob alluded to, that's one of the reasons, too, that I ended up buying a lot of records early on, because there was a lot of top 40, but it was pretty, you know, manufactured, and it was pretty by the book. I mean, DC, as you guys know from living here, is pretty different from a lot of places in the country, especially when we're like we are inside the Beltway or, you know, near the Beltway, right? So there's never been a dominant radio station, really. I mean, when I was you know, in junior high and high school, probably the biggest thing that happened to radio in DC is when Howard Stern came here and he started off on WWDC. I believe it was DC 101 maybe at the time. And that's where he built up his basic thing before he went to New York and really started taking off. So yeah, I always will credit radio for making me a music fan. I'll never, ever forget the day I was in the back seat of my mom's Galaxy 500 and heard Ring of Fire on the radio and was never so frightened in my entire life, but also so attracted. You know, I was scared yet fascinated at the same time. What was this? But a couple things I will say, Rob touched on alternative radio. When I was in high school, we had a pretty cool alternative radio station called WHFS.
That's what I wanted to get to, because you mentioned DC being this like radio desert, which it is now.
It is.
In the time that I've lived here since 07, the radio has been pretty terrible.
Yeah. It's all, but like, I had always heard something.
I'd always heard people talk about this great station that used to be here. Mm-hmm. So it, there was something good at one point.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a really cool station, WHFS 99.1, and they definitely played, as Rob was saying, like that second British invasion stuff. They played a lot of Elvis Costello. They played a lot of New Wave. You know, I can remember hearing stuff on that radio station that I had never heard before, didn't know about, especially a lot of English stuff. There was a guy named Weasel whose voice literally was like a weasel, who was a pretty well-known DJ. And they also, I remember on Valentine's Day, they always did an amazing show where the whole theme was love, right? Every single song had something to do. And you heard like Love Minus Zero, No Limit by Dylan mixed with, you know, some new wave song mixed with, you know, some old like roots rock song that you had never heard of, maybe with some like Sun Records stuff. So it was a very cool introduction to me to freeform radio. And it got kind of muscled out. You know, it was purchased and, you know, sort of slowly started getting watered down when more commercial records started being played on the station. But yeah, for a while, it was a pretty important radio station in DC. And, you know, interestingly enough to me, it was also one of those things that made me, I was almost always competitive about finding music and buying music. And I was get competitive with like WHFS. I was like, well, if they're playing that record, I need to find something more obscure than that record and find, you know, it was like my competition in some ways.
So it almost like that stuff's become mainstream in your
mind. That's right. That's the barometer. Other people can hear it. I need something weirder that nobody else has. Right. And that would literally drive me to find strange stuff. And yes, Rob, I bought a lot of stuff that I really shouldn't have bought because I didn't know what it was. I based on the cover. The other thing I'll say, too, about my growing up, and this is when I was a little bit older, but WAMU, the NPR station here in D.C., used to do, at drive time, a show called Bluegrass Country with a guy called Ray Davis, who's a very experienced radio DJ. And they would just play pure bluegrass, like every day from 3 to 6. And I used to listen to that a lot. By the time I got jobs and was driving home, I thought it was so strange that you could turn on and hear this, you know, hardcore bluegrass music. I mean, you were talking like all the old stuff from the 50s and 60s, you know, and the obscure B-sides and just 45s they would play. And it was an amazing show. And it carried on for a while. I used to contribute to it. And I remember one time they were having their pledge drive, which public radio stations do. And we really wanted to get my friend Brad's name on the radio. So we donated money just so they would announce that Brad Mailer has made a donation, and we did record that and use it later in a recording. I think because we have the political climate, I mean, probably the news station here is the most popular radio station around here now.
Well,
right? the 24-hour news station.
A lot WTOP, of DC radio stations just get taken over by news and talk and political
or Washington football team talk.
Right.
Big too. Yeah.
All of that. Yeah. Right. But there's a number of stations on the AM side that are political stations all across the spectrum, and then like sort of like government.
That's right. Like, yeah, there's even like a government channel.
Affairs kind of stuff, right? That's not even necessarily politics.
No,
but like,
for like employees of the government, because there are so many, you know.
That's right.
It's different languages.
That's true.
And there's that too.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
There's only so much bandwidth.
Yeah.
I think DC's a unique market in radio.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Rob, because 99.1 now, if you go to it, used to be WHFS, is a Hispanic language channel. They play all kinds of stuff, but it, again, mostly talk and news and information. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to touch on sort of all the things you mentioned. I can't remember any great DJs or anything in Toledo, but I do remember my experiences with radio growing up were, one, the AM station in the 70s that my mom would always have on in the car. And then this car, 1973 AMC Hornet, she only had an AM radio.
Yeah.
We didn't even have an FM in it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Just a single speaker on the dashboard.
Yep.
And
we had to pay extra for the FM.
That's right.
And so she was driving around, I'd be in the back seat, and she'd have on whatever the soft rock, you know, that AM Gold kind of thing that you think about now with KTEL Records and all that stuff, you know, and you'd hear like, I don't know, like Baker Street or whatever, like would be the song playing, right? Or Seasons in the Sun, or those kinds of things, right? Remember all those songs. And then when I started getting into music, it started with Top 40. I think it does for most kids, right? So we had a Top 40 station. I can't remember what it was called. But, you know, I felt like I kind of, maybe it's just nostalgia or whatever, but I kind of felt like I came into Top 40 at a pretty good time. It was pretty diverse in the late 70s, early 80s, you know? So there was some interesting stuff there. But anyway, I remember when I got my high school job at McDonald's, and at one point during the summer when I could work a lot of hours, I volunteered to be like the backup maintenance person, right? Because I could get a lot more hours, and I could also, it might sound insane, but like I could do the opening shift, which meant then I could get done.
Right.
I could put in a full shift and get done by like noon or 1 o'clock and then have the rest of my day.
Right.
And what I would do is then I would work that shift, go home smelling like grease, take a shower, go to bed for a while. So then I could go out with my friends.
Right.
It wouldn't be so tired that evening. Yeah. That was kind of like how I spent my summer. But anyway, the point is, by being the like this maintenance thing where you'd come in and open, you were kind of left to your own to do all the stuff on this checklist that had to be done, right?
Yeah.
And so in the basement of the McDonald's was where they had this break room, right? And the next to that was the storage room. Well, the break room had a radio, like a bookcase stereo kind of thing, right? You know, it was pretty good sounding. But there was a point in the shift where like I'd have to go down and clean that up and clean up the storage room and rearrange things and do all this kind of stuff. And it was probably an hour or so of the day. And I could just listen to American Top 40.
Nice.
You know, I remember that specifically on Sunday morning, American Top 40.
That was
it. Right. And just sort of get your rundown of all the popular songs and everything. And this would have been a little bit later on. This was like mid 80s. So, you know, you're in the era of like Prince and Springsteen and Madonna all having hits. And it was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, way to spend an hour, right? You know what I mean?
Totally.
So anyways, there was that. At some point, of course, my own personal taste, I went to the AOR station, which was FM 104, WIOT. I'm looking at their website now. It's still around. Still the same call letters. Right? Still doing the same stuff. FM 104. Yeah, I'm sure it was pretty standard AOR stuff. You know, you mentioned Zeppelin, The Who.
Yep.
I remember a lot of Rush. We got, I think I've talked about this before. We got a lot of Rush
big around
Ohio.
There,
and I think, again, because they like sort of broke in Ohio first. And also, we were only an hour's drive from Windsor, Ontario. That's how close we were to Canada.
Wow.
Right? So it just kind of made sense there'd be interest in this big band from Canada.
Totally.
Right? You know,
yeah,
so a lot
totally.
Of that. That's about it. We didn't have any great alternative stations or anything like that in Toledo. It wasn't until I got to college that I got exposed to all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And to Rob's point about not wanting to spend money on something you hadn't heard, I was so afraid on my $3.50 an hour or whatever I made at McDonald's. I was so afraid to spend money on an album that I, even if I read something about it, I just couldn't do it. In fact, I even had a rule at one point. I was like, I got to hear two songs off an album.
That's why they put out singles.
Yes, there were singles, of course. And the greatest hits albums for me were like the best thing.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Totally.
Because then you're really getting value for your money, right?
I will say, though, I have a book at home that if anyone's interested in the history of radio, it's written by Mark Fisher, a longtime writer for the Washington Post. It's called Something in the Air, Radio Rock and the Revolution That Shaped a Generation. It's a really good overview of the history of radio. And when you think about it, I think it was published in 2007, it looks like here. I believe it has a really interesting story about how Top 40 was actually developed. There was some formula, but to think that the internet and streaming and all this, and still there's a ton of radio stations, like how did like 8-track tapes or cassettes, how did, you know, the next technological revolution, television, you know, mainly and at-home streaming not kill radio altogether? It's really kind of an interesting thing.
It is. I do wonder about that too, but I think one thing you have to put in perspective, I think listeners to this show in particular will get this, is that the normals out there are not so into music like we are.
That's true.
And they'll just have the radio on
as
just something to have on.
Yeah.
Right? And whether it's driving around the car or at home or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just something you have on. But I also think to Rob's point, maybe they also connect with the DJs in some ways too, right? It's not so much about the music. It's about the show that you're listening to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of that. So radio still endures. I think it still has a place. The other thing that's interesting about the rise of radio and why the business model really worked is they never had to pay royalties.
True.
They got that. I don't remember how this worked exactly, but there was some exemption from paying royalties allowed to terrestrial radio stations.
Right.
And so you could play that Led Zeppelin song 100 times a day and they didn't get any money out of that.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's very true.
Well, because how else are you going to get your music promoted?
There you go.
It's the same thing. I'm not going to spend money. I'm not going to spend money on something I haven't heard. So,
right.
You know, I'm not going to play that song.
Right.
Right.
And not that many people even back then were putting their dime in jukeboxes, right? Because once again, you're spending money before you get to hear something. Yeah. So,
but yeah. I also think you have a lot of people that work outside.
That's a good point too. Yep.
I mean, you know, they're not going to hook up Spotify to whatever,
right.
You know, thing.
Right.
So they're going to listen to the radio. People in their car, obviously, because you can't watch MTV.
Yep.
While driving, can't now, but yeah. You probably shouldn't. And then also, you know, a lot of stores, retail outlets,
good point.
Restaurants.
Well, there's that.
Some,
too,
yeah, I mean, some have soundtracks, but more often I hear radio stations, especially in smaller towns.
Yep.
One thing you reminded me about Howard Stern, I remember being in high school and one of my classmates told me, he goes, oh, you got to listen to this guy. He's hysterical. I can't believe he says this stuff on the radio. I'm like, really? What channel is he in? It's on WNBC in New York. He goes, but, you know, I can get that at my house. I remember if the car was parked in the driveway in just the right spot, you could tune in, you know, 66 That's WNBC right. in New York from suburban Philadelphia and listen to Howard Stern in the afternoon.
Especially sometimes at night, too. You could get into all these radio stations.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole nother, you know, in sports fans, especially.
If you're a baseball fan.
Baseball fans. All those night games from wherever. And there's a whole nother discussion on that.
Well, because the thing there, I don't want to get too far into this, but the thing there was like some licenses you had to like power down at a certain time and others you could increase the frequency or something. So there were these clear channel
stations.
They had
the clear channel.
Not the brand.
Right.
Yeah.
WSM from the Grand Ole Opry, right?
That's how all that stuff became huge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you could hear it everywhere.
So WBZ in Boston, I think they said you could be reaching 38 states.
Yes, which is incredible. Right.
And part of the way they did that was their transmitters right next to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to literally bounce the signal off the ocean and back up and send it. But you could hear them pretty much wherever I've lived east of the Rockies. You know,
you could hear that station. That's kind of incredible.
Two other quick things I'll say about radio. You just reminded me about that effort to like hear something that you could just barely get, right? When I was in college in Bloomington, Indiana, and would drive home to Toledo, Ohio, there was maybe 20 to 30 minute portion of the drive where I could get this really cool station out of Cincinnati called WOXY 97X, the future of rock and roll, which was featured in the movie Rain Man.
Oh, was it really? Oh, cool.
He hears that like little stinger and he keeps repeating it over and over again on their trip and driving Tom Cruise crazy.
97X, the future of rock and roll.
It was an alternative, you know, a commercial alternative station, which there weren't that many of. And I knew like exactly on the drive, what point in the drive I would start to get the signal and when I would, you know, and unfortunately when I would start to lose it, I would make sure to tune in so I could get that 30 minutes or so of like, you know, they play like Husker Du or whatever, you know what I mean?
It was
like
really just cool. Just to hear those songs, right? Yeah.
So there was that. My favorite radio station in the DC area now, if I have occasion to where I would listen to the radio, is this station called 94.7 The Drive.
The Drive. Yeah, I like that.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Because you know what it is? It's all 80s top 40.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And so it takes me back to those days, like I just mentioned. But also, the songs are good.
Yeah.
Like they're good songs. You know?
Solid tunes.
And I also find this interesting. Why is there an 80s station? Is it just because of the timing of being like 40 years ago so they can hit this listenership, you know, that wants that nostalgia, right? That they want to cater to?
Right.
Or is there something about the 80s?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a good question.
I'm going to pose that to the listeners.
Yeah, so you can it's a tell good me. Question.
Why is there an 80s station?
Yep.
I don't believe there's a 90s station or a 70s station, but there's an 80s
station. Or 2000s, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, we've discussed this. I mean, there's something about the 80s.
There is.
There is. Yeah.
You know, the 80s music is so unique from the music of the 70s and also from the music of the 90s.
I get it.
You know, it's tough to mix Husker Du. Well, maybe not Husker Du, but it's tough to mix Depeche Mode with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah,
right. I think there is a lot of variety even within the top 40 is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get out of here. This is a good discussion.
could go on for hours.
Yes, we could.
We'll follow this up because I'm sure people out there have radio stories from when they were younger.
Oh, gotcha.
We would love to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So best thing to do is call and leave a message on the Suburban Party Line, 612-440-1984. Yes. Or if you'd rather, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com or leave a comment on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right.
One quick question before we leave. We don't have to go into it. Just yes or no.
Yes.
Did you ever win anything by being a certain caller on the radio?
Yes.
No.
No.
Okay.
But I tried like crazy.
Oh, yes.
So this is insane. Yes. I once was the whatever number caller.
Yep.
I was a kid. This was before I could drive or anything. I was a kid. And I won tickets to a movie.
Wow.
And it was actually a kid's movie. It was some Disney movie with like Tim Conway. It was like one of those kind of deals, right?
Everybody goes bananas.
I don't think it stood the test of time. I don't remember what the movie was, but it was some goofy Disney movie with Tim Conway is what I remember. But I remember my parents being kind of annoyed because they had to like drive me to the radio station to like pick up the tickets. You know what I mean? Because it was one of those deals like you win, but you got to come here to get them. We're not sending it to you or whatever. And
you have to be here by 5 o'clock.
Right.
By 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
Right. But I did. It was one of the thrills of my life.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I spent many hours redialing that number and over and over and over. Never won anything.
That's right. No, and sometimes you get in and they'd be like, you're only the fourth caller.
Right.
You need to be caller number 8.
Yeah, you didn't get the busy signal. That's Wait a minute. This could be it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lennon.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Rob Gates.
We'll talk to you all later.
Shouldn't have bought the Pablo Cruz. That was a mistake. Yeah.